This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Welcome to In Focus. Good to have you with us. I'm Roger Gray, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Andrews Behavioral Center. Longtime fixture in this area, serving several counties here in East Texas, and the CEO, Lynn Rutland, is with us. Welcome.
Well, thank you very much. Glad to be with you.
Good to have you with us. And we're going to tell everybody about a very special event that's coming up, May 6th. But first, if you had to, how do you describe the Andrews Center?
Well, the Andrews Center in the Kennedy administration was born out of the desire to have community-based levels of care. We were going to close those big asylums, close the big institutions that had become warehouses.
Right.
Look kind of like our jails do today. Mm-hmm. So that was the desire to move away from that and to support people in the community in the least restrictive environment and in a good therapeutic way. So our center was born some 58 years ago, and we've had a presence here, and we've served Smith, Van Zandt, Wood, Raines, Henderson counties, and so a population base of about 455,000 people live in those counties, and we serve about 10,000 each and every year.
Wow. That's a big deal. It's interesting you described that. My uncle, my father's brother, father's family is all from Louisiana, suffered a birth defect. He was part of a pair of twins and was injured during the birth process, and he lived at the state home in Louisiana. We would visit. Dad would bring him candy bars and cigarettes and stuff he couldn't get there. So I have seen those facilities, and yeah, they were pretty anonymous. You're right. It's a warehouse. It was a warehouse.
We were doing the best we could at the time with what we had and what we knew. The beautiful thing about the mind now is that we know so much more, and our medications are so improved. Yeah. Our therapies are working. And so people before, really, if you had that diagnosis of schizophrenia or bipolar, major depressive disorder, it was going to give you a lifetime of agony. And so for so many people, what we've been able to do is to really engage them where they are and provide hope through all kinds of means. So we got a great team. Andrews Center has about 325 staff. We're your taxpaying dollars at work.
And talking about antiquated centers, there are antiquated terminologies as well.
Sure.
We used to use the word retarded, which is a pejorative now. How do we reference this range of conditions?
That's a great question because, you know, in some circles, it's mental illness, and others, it's mental health or its mental wellness. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of how then you are going to address what aspect of it that it is. But we are the behavioral health center, and that's the way we just like to refer it to that. And it's a place of great hope.
IDD, I know, is the terminology today. What does that stand for?
So that's intellectual and developmental disabilities. And that's largely for those that have an IQ functioning under 70. So back in the early days when they formed our community centers, we have 39.
By the way, I'm not going to make a joke about Congress at this point.
We have 39 community centers all across Texas, and most all of us, with few exceptions, do both mental health and the IDD population under the umbrella. Few states have those two mixed together, but for us, that's the way it's been. So we have the local authority in both the behavioral health and the IDD side. We provide some services, but then there's a lot of great private providers in our community on the IDD side as well. So those are services that we become the front door following the state contract and mandates of what services we can offer to those qualified.
Now, you work with the state. How does that relationship work? And what brings somebody to you guys instead of first seeking out some sort of private provider?
Yeah, so the state operates some services, Terrell State Hospital locally, or Rusk State Hospital, Mahia State School. Those are all state facilities. I spent my first 20 years in one of those out in San Angelo. It had just converted in the late 60s, early 70s from the old tuberculosis facility that was out there. And when we eradicated it, the state said, well, we're going to go to congregate living for this population. Like you said, we called it mental retardation back of the day, and it was just a great place for me to learn the trade over 50 years ago and to find out that that's where I wanted to work along with my pastoral duty. So I had both of those. So the state still operates some things. In our space, the community behavioral health space, for many years, the state, off of those state hospitals, would offer community services around them in the geographic area. And then when the state made the decision to move away from that and let the community communities, our local communities, really make the decisions about what all we're going to do in this area for this population, then we're now under contract with the state as the local mental health authority. We're governed by 9 trustees.
Okay.
And so we're a unit of local government, but with 2 important caveats, and people always lack both of these.
Okay.
One, we're a unit of local government that cannot tax.
Okay.
And we don't have eminent domain. So I've been on a school board before, or if you've been with the city or the county, those are local units of government.
Right. Right.
With taxing authority. So then you say, well, how do you get the $30 million that it takes to operate the center year to year? Well, all these other entities, local, state, and federal, they have to tax on our behalf. So they tax the citizens and they send the money to us. And typically it goes to HHSC.
Right.
And then they in turn provide contracts for us to do it. They tell us how many, what kinds of services. We can appeal for additional services out of the 88th legislative session. We were blessed. There were new monies out there outside of what they invested in the state facilities.
Yeah, state's been running a pretty good surplus, so that's good.
They've done good. They did good. They invested in state facilities alone, inpatient facilities, which is the most expensive part of what we do.
Sure.
That piece, they invested $3.2 billion in the 88th session, but then they also created other pockets of money you can compete for. Our center did really well. I got a great team over there. They're working hard. They know how to win. And so I think they competed for 17 extra grants or resources, and they were awarded 15 of them. So $7.5 million of services came into our area pretty quietly. We're still working through getting some of those off the ground, but most of them are up and going.
You work at all with the federal HHS department?
We can sometimes.
And are you going to be affected by a lot of the changes going on?
So we take local funds. We take mostly state funds, but then there's some Medicaid block grant and other funds from the federal government that come to the state.
Right.
But we can also compete for grants at SAMHSA and other places, of which we've done, and we did well. There were only 5 centers year before last that were awarded $1 million grants. We got one here for our area, which is a beautiful thing. It kind of jump-started us. And so out of that, then we've been able to hire a board-certified child and adolescent psychiatrist. Not many of those around these days. As we know, we're an under resourced area, professional under-realized area. And so to have one of those, have AJ with us has been awesome. But what's happening now? We got our first letter yesterday that said some of those ERISA funds or ARPA funds that we're going to roll off at the end of the fiscal year, rewind those, and those now are coming off last month. And so everything we had planned to bill for the remainder of this fiscal year, we are not going to have those funds in this one particular line item. So what we're doing now is we're watching all the different lines that we have that were directly from the feds or from the feds to the state and then to us. We don't know where we're going to land because here's what we do have, Roger. This is good. So the legislature in this 89th session, again, a great surplus. So we got this hole that's been created where we were told one of the things to do with those ERISA funds is to expand your service capacity. So now we serve more people than we're paid to serve because we had those funds. But those funds, we believe, at the end of the year will go away. Well, not all is lost yet because the legislature has the opportunity, if they elect to take some of that surplus and to fill that gap on our behalf. And so I know that's a part of the discussion that's going on. We have finally now 5 representatives and 5 senators who I guess were appointed in the last day or two for the conference committee. They'll get together and decide the final budget. So we're not really making strong statements yet as to what the effect will be locally, but the risk is there, and that's a great question.
Well, and you have to you have to hope, at least rather, that they understand some of the federal money. That pipeline may be at the very least shrinking, and the state may have to step up a little more.
Yeah. So I think all of us.
And not just for you guys, I guess for care all over the state. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I think not all of us who, you know, the nice thing, and I hear this often, you know, in our county, in our city, in our agency, in the state, we've been fiscally responsible. If you give me a dollar, I'm going to try to spend 98 cents and not go over. I mean, that's just it.
Sure.
So the federal government, where we are at whatever that new number is, what is it, $32 trillion or whatever it is. It's huge. And yeah. I think all of us understand the future without grabbing a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say for Texas, now's the best time for us to grab a hold of it because our economy, as we all know, has done so well.
Sure.
And we're doing so well.
Mm-hmm.
So then the question is, how do we get off of that more the federal and get more onto the state and have those funds to be able to do what we need to do here? Because mental illness, it's not going away. In fact, in many indicators, it's going the wrong way.
Yeah. Well, how many, you mentioned a number in passing, and I don't want to let it pass. How many people in our area do you guys see every year?
Yeah, about 10,000. So generally...
Is it just me, or does that seem like a huge number?
It's a huge number, but it's about 3% of our population.
Okay.
Again, we have clinics in all the different counties. They do wonderful work. In fact, we see more people in Athens and Mineola and up at Emory and over at Canton.
Mm-hmm.
When you add those together, we see more people in those county locations than we do here in our Smith County location over on Front Street, which most everybody knows because it's so close to the Brookshire Center.
Yeah.
Everybody knows where we are over there. But, we serve about 10,000. And generally, 2 to 3% of your population will have an illness, a diagnosis, and severity that they would qualify for our services. And people go, well, who are you competing with? No one. Because I can tell you, we look not for competition. We look for partners.
Okay.
And so when we think about where we're headed with the Summit 2.0, that's up and coming. I know we'll talk about that in a minute. Here's what's really great about that. We have such a delegation of partners, 75 plus, that are going to be coming. They all have these nonprofits. It takes all of us, and even with all of us aligned around, we still are not getting everything done that needs to be done in this space for East Texas.
Wow.
But it's coming. We're getting there.
Yeah, well, I understand. And there's so many areas you guys work on, whether it's, for example, something we don't tend to associate with mental health, but addiction.
Yes.
For example, I know you guys
have a substance abuse
deal with that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a strong program, and it's a growing program, and it touches so many facets from everyday life for those that have a diagnosis, those that don't, those in our veteran services, and the list goes on and on.
Yeah. And it may also, as far as emotional problems, they may manifest differently, I'm guessing anyway, depending on your age. Young people, the things that they're dealing with, in addition to just the normal stuff every kid is dealing with growing up. It's a different animal almost.
It is, and we're living a different day and time, and it makes us scratch our head a lot of times too because of the severity. So our kids are getting younger, coming in the front door, and they're getting more severe, and that we know for a fact. That's the reason we needed to have that new board certified child and adolescent psychiatrist come on board because of those facts. What we're seeing is when you look at the diagnosis and that group of kids, the beautiful program we have here locally called TCHAT, which is the program where on all of our school districts, they then have through their counselors, they can get immediate assessment referral. They can offer a few sessions and then they hand people off to people like us.
Mm-hmm.
So we are building this support network. But what we're seeing is that more and more and more of these kids are so desperate that in East Texas, the death by suicide is leading the state of Texas. And that's a sad fact, but it tells us where we are. And, you know, as I tell everybody, there's nothing wrong being at the bottom when it comes to mental health care in the state of Texas, and that's where East Texas is. But that's not a place to end. We have got to continue to get after this thing and try to make a difference.
What are your experts, what do the folks that deal with these teenagers tell you as far as what they're facing? What are the challenges that are apparently overwhelming them in some cases?
You know, the social media aspect comes up in every conversation.
That would be my
guess. Every conversation. In fact, I listened to a bill being laid out in the Senate yesterday. A senator had filed a bill, and I think it passed out of committee, and that is that we would put into state law, this is how important it is to them, that a kid cannot take their phone into that classroom unless there's certain specific conditions, which are very limited. And so, because what they find is that when you look at the social aspect, it may have some redeeming qualities, but there's certainly a lot of qualities that I think all of us would go, you know, I didn't grow up with that. I don't know what that, you know, I didn't have a phone as a kid.
Well, and you don't need it in the classroom. Now you're lopping into the Department of Education's problems as well, because it's just distracting.
It is
for that, but it's also a vehicle for a lot of emotional stress for a kid.
It is
as much as we all grew up with. And you know, kids can be incredibly cruel, but you intensify that with the constant doom scrolling on your cell.
Yeah. We got 17 grandkids. We've adopted of that group in our five kids, but the 17 grandkids, we've adopted five out of the CPS system. Mm-hmm. So we not just talk the talk, we really walk the walk, and I'm proud of our kids for the work that they do in this space, and they're helping these kids. But these kids, Roger, they do come wired a bit differently. And in fact, after the summit last year, we had many of those mothers. They came to us just fervently saying, we need more in the space to help us. We've agreed to the state to help do this job for them and raise these kids, but we need more support. We need more help. And they identify those places. So we have been studying it for a year. We have drafted for our legislators to consider what we call a children's center of excellence. It's a place where these families can go and have all seven, there's seven evidence-based practices in Texas, have all of those there. There's no county in Texas that has all seven. We want all seven here. We want to put on the ground what these families are telling us that they need and what these kids need, and just to provide some hope. Because I'm kind of like you. I don't know all the reasons why we are where we are, but I know we got to do something now and not just consider everything to be an upstream issue for the future.
Yeah, as somebody of my generation, our generation, Facebook is fun for hooking up with old friends, old classmates, guys I went to college with and that sort of thing. But boy, beyond that, it can get pretty rough, and it gets pretty personal between young people.
Yeah, I don't know how well I deal with all that stuff. That's the reason I'm not on Facebook. Yeah. I let my wife screen all of our content.
But yeah, it is tough, and it's and you guys, you also handle emergency crisis situations.
That is one of the places that we have really have shown beautifully in the last couple of years. So communities who wanted to partner with the Judicial Commission on Mental Health out of Austin, an incredible group of people. They came here in September of 22. I had just been here a few months, and they came for the purpose of helping us, Smith County, identify our gaps. Okay. So we then sat for a day and a half. Judge Franklin was there. I mean, all of your key leaders were at the table, and we identified where our gaps were. Then we created a position who's we call the SIM, the Chief Executive, Chief SIM Executive Officer at the Andrews Center for the purpose of helping us mitigate these gaps. And most of it is right there in that emergency section. So why do we have 40% of the 900 to 1,000 inmates at the Smith County Jail have a diagnosed mental illness? What's going on with that?
Right.
And why is that the case? So we have now the Andrews Center as an office in Smith County Jail. We work with Jail Navigator Program. Judge Franklin at the State of the County last week or the week before, he gave it a big shout out and said this is the kind of collaboration we need in our community. So what you're seeing is that we deal with that emergency, with it, whether it's with law enforcement, at the emergency rooms, if it's actually at the jail, wherever that crisis is. I've got a mobile crisis outreach team, and that's what they do.
And the mobile crisis team is obviously necessary because this is an immediate problem.
It is.
Or there may be a terrible result. There was a phrase, and I was doing the reading on this. There was a phrase here that, suicide free. You wanted to...
Zero suicide.
Zero suicide. That's what it was.
Yeah, so the goal within our organization is for our patients to never get to a point, mm-hmm. No matter what they're living with, to get to the point that death by suicide is a route that they choose to mm-hmm. go. You know, from the time they have that thought until they actually execute the deed, they say is an average of 50 seconds. Mm-hmm. We know that from the survivors. So 23, we had 8 of our patients die by suicide, mm-hmm. and we said that's not acceptable.
Yeah.
And so we began a zero suicide initiative within the center itself. Mm-hmm. So in 24, we reduced it from 8 to 4. And so far in 25, I'm glad to report we only have 1.
Okay.
Now, that's in the context of just those that we serve.
Right.
But Smith County, all your East Texas counties, Dr. McCullough Smith, who chairs the psych department out there at the UT system, she gave a presentation last year. She gave every one of our East Texas counties, starting with Anderson, Cherokee, who had the highest death per capita, all the way through Smith County's right in there. All of us are above the state average. Mm-hmm. It's an East Texas phenomena, Roger. It's mm-hmm. not just our county, but it's this whole area. And
do your experts have any idea about that? Why? Areas. I know that I mentioned it before. I used to be a news director up in the Rockies. I was based in Wyoming, covering Montana and Colorado news departments. But the suicide rate in Wyoming was like the tops in the country, and they attributed it to number one, it's a very it's a population that is reluctant to seek help.
Yes,
and there's isolation.
Yeah.
It's a very lowest population density in the country.
Yeah.
So a lot of people living far away from help and other people and all of that, and whatever problems they have just stew.
Yeah. You know, it's not unusual. We hear stories regularly, 9 to 10 years from the time of onset until the first time they step in for treatment.
Mm.
They can languish that long. So what do we believe here? Stigma in East Texas is...
And there's a cowboy mentality here. Exactly. I can handle this.
Yes,
you know,
and we
I
expect our
to
neighbors
it.
To. And we expect yeah. our neighbors to. But you know, when I came 3 years ago, I was mesmerized. Very little travel in East Texas. I'm mesmerized by how many churches we have in the area.
Yeah.
And we have almost 400 in Smith County alone. And I'm going, man, this is a beacon of hope. That's what these churches are all
yeah.
about. And yet our suicide rate, I could not believe my eyes. So we began to dig in, ask a lot of our retired pastors and mm-hmm. others who've been here for a while. So part of what we're going to do in the summer, we're going to spend 20 minutes. I don't know if you have yet met DeMarcus Pearson, Love Thy City, and yeah. that incredible initiative. They're coming alongside this year, and they're
okay.
coming to the summit. And we've invited all 400 pastors to be in attendance at the summit because
okay.
we need to have a conversation with them, because I will say, as the local mental health authority, and I got 325 great staff, and then I got 75 partner organizations. Mm-hmm. If we're perfectly cooperating and aligned, we're still not going to cover the waterfront. We need 400 churches to be out there to mm-hmm. be that first line of defense going, hey, Lynn, you might need some help.
Yeah, well,
I think I know who to call.
I can't think of anything more ecumenical than helping folks who are in having emotional issues.
Sure,
that's what churches and synagogues and everybody, that's what they're about.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. We're blessed here to have such a waterfront. And so it's a matter of helping. You know, we've had a few pastors in our area even die by suicide, and those become very troubling mm-hmm. for the congregation and for our community. We had
sure.
one church, unnamed church, since the 1st of January, has had a cluster mm-hmm. of 5 deaths by suicide in one church.
Oh, my.
And so what we're beginning to, as we're beginning to look at this, is now beginning to have this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's gonna start with the summit in May 6th, then it's going to get to Love Thy City, and then Lathan Craft is a dear friend. He is going to carry this forward for us into the future, and so that we hope it takes roots, because it's going to take our whole community to turn this thing around. Mm-hmm.
And you guys deal with autism as well, which has also been in the news lately. And I know people are looking for some sort of cause. My guess is, though, we're getting much better at diagnosing it.
That's one. Yeah. That's one aspect of it.
Yeah.
The other, you see your cabinet member by the name of Kennedy.
Yeah.
He's got his own theories about that
yeah.
as well, and we hear those out there. Certainly, I'm not in a position to make a decision one way or the other on that, but we do know that the prevalence is up and the severity is up.
Mm-hmm.
So we serve probably about 20 kids in our autism programs, the Treatment Learning Center. Some of these kids may be the most difficult kids that we have in our community.
Mm-hmm.
We're proud to get to partner with those families. place. They love our services. They come speak to our board, say thank you for having the Autism Center there. Mm-hmm. You know, they had their big run here, their benefit a couple of weeks ago, and I think that ended up, Leanne said, they ended up having to cancel that because of the rain.
Yeah.
That was their big fundraiser for mm-hmm. the year. They usually raise $35,000, $40,000 for that. But it is a part of our program. Not all community centers. In fact, if you see one community center in Texas, you've seen one community center, because we don't all offer the same array of services.
Right.
Many community centers will not offer it because it's so poorly funded or not funded. It really takes the community to come alongside to make mm-hmm. that program a reality.
Okay. Well, we mentioned the cell. I don't want to run out of time. We got a little time here, but I want to talk about it. This is coming up May 6th. Explain what's going to happen.
So last year, we had a vision to have our very initial East Texas Behavioral Health Mental Health Summit. It was 1.0. We'd never done it. We mm-hmm. had a stretch goal. I can tell you, we were so proud. 1,200 people showed up that day. We had three incredible speakers. Dr. Andy Keller, president of the Meadows Institute, the most important think tank that we not only have in Texas, but we have in the United States. Mm-hmm. He kicked us off. Lee Johnson of the Texas Council. And then Dr. Cheryl McCollum Smith. All three of them spoke. Mm-hmm. And then we had all these resource tables. This year, because those were so popular last year, we only did it from 1 to 5. And the conference itself is, the speakers are 2 to 4.
Right.
So this year, we're going to back it up an hour. We're going to open the doors at noon. And from noon to 2, all of these partners will be there. And then we will have from 2 to 4, what I call 10 mental health champions. Judge Franklin has agreed mm-hmm. to kick us off. This is his passion. It's in his wheelhouse. He loves this.
Good.
And so he will he'll kick us off. Dr. Philly will speak. Our new CEO, Becky Mangum, will be speaking. We'll have a great lineup. But our keynote will be a gentleman by the name of Doug Smith. Doug suffers from severe mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't know it today because he's got multiple degrees. He's just finished his first book, and he's says lessons learned from 6 years in the jailhouse. His mental illness put him where a lot of people are.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of us would write somebody like that off and say, well, they probably don't have much redeeming value.
Mm-hmm.
Doug will tell you that is a falsehood, and he will inspire hope. We've had him here 3 times before, twice to do our summits, and then once to speak to our board. And so when we got through with last year, we said, who we want to be the speaker next year?
Yeah.
It was unanimous among our leadership team, get Doug Smith here.
So I gather whatever the demons were he was dealing with that landed him in jail.
Medication and therapy. There he is.
Yeah.
He got it figured out. And, you know, it's just, we're proud of him. And he's an inspiration to me.
So this is going to be at the Brookshire Conference Center.
It will.
Yeah.
Yeah. At 2 to 4 for those that just want the conference. But if you want to meet some of the people that work in this space, you need referrals.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a pastor and you want, I need 75 places to refer people to, you come and you work those tables.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know who those people are. There's a lot of great, great organizations in town that we partner with. And they love this space. And they serve more out of mission than they do anything else.
Well, and we talk about pastors, I mean, health professionals, educators.
Absolutely.
How many, I recall great teachers that they'd keep an eye out and they would see and they would let parents say, you know, I think maybe your child needs to see somebody.
Absolutely.
You know, we're dealing with some issues.
Whoever's dealing with them on the front lines, this
yeah.
would be a perfect opportunity. We have some specialized training in the morning. They just go to andrewscenter.com
mm-hmm.
and find out what those are. Those are morning opportunities. I don't think they're full yet, but they're getting close. We already had over 600 people RSVP. It's not required, but we like to know
yeah.
that you're coming. So you just go to andrewscenter.com and you'll find the flag there and you click on it and get signed up. So with the 75 providers, having already 600,
mm-hmm.
It's going to be a full Brookshire Center, no doubt about it.
Well, and it is also free.
Free.
That's the key word here for most of us.
And for East Texas, it's education
mm-hmm.
and it's linkages and it's partnerships and who's in this space. And we'll talk about the stigma and how to destigmatize
mm-hmm.
something that we don't want to talk about in East Texas.
Yeah.
I find that, and that's probably true everywhere, but most especially here.
Sure.
So it's just a bold effort to bring education and awareness mm-hmm. in a space that we need it.
Okay. Lynn Rutland, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We're just flat out of time.
Hey, thank you.
Good to have you here. Again, that is May 6th at the Brookshire Center. Go and enjoy and learn. And thank you guys for being with us. Appreciate it. This will all be on KTBB.com. Thanks so much, and we will see you next week.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.